You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, June 24th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's also two shows away from our 420th episode this Thursday. Looking forward to this Thursday, 420 episodes as the Independent Russ Melville Show. And then we're going to be taking our summer vacation. No show on Friday and no shows next week. We will be on our annual July 4th vacation. But this weekend, we are headed to the Cannabis Cup in Santa Rosa. So next week, we will bring you all sorts of video coverage of that Cannabis Cup. I just won't be here live showing it to you. And speaking of the fun that we have at these various events, we've got Priscilla Seibin, our newsreader, on the line in Colorado, where she has just returned from a cannabis-themed event, her first one as a member of the 420 Radio crew. How was the event there, Priscilla? I saw a cool picture.
Yeah, it was really fun. I met a ton of great people, and everyone was so nice.
Yeah, a big old ice bong you got to toke off of. How was that?
Oh, it was good. It was four-footer. I could stand on a chair so that way I could hit it properly. But yeah, it was really great. It was brought to us by Purple Haze. They took the tubes, and then Jane West, man, she can throw a party.
Oh yeah, Jane can throw a great party. I wish I could have been there. I also understand going on this weekend is the big National Cannabis Industries Association Summit. Have you heard much about that yet?
Yeah, I did. I know that there's a lot of, there's some speakers today at the Denver Convention Center, and I know that they just got another event at Cervantes Masterpiece tonight, a cannabis carnival. And it's all heading up the Cannabis Summit, so it seems pretty interesting.
All right. Hey, we've got a recorder that we're sending you. I meant to send it yesterday and got behind on my work, but we'll send you that recorder tomorrow. And, you know, whenever you get a chance to head out, if you see any of these events and want to take a recorder, get some audio or video, we'd love to have it here on the show.
Yeah, right on, definitely. I talked to a lot of people who said hello.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And say hello back to him for me. We'll be back with Priscilla after our first break. She's going to cover our 420 Radio headline news. We're in the headlines today. We've got an opening date for Washington State's retail marijuana stores. A family in Washington State can't mention medical marijuana at trial. The gubernatorial candidates in Maryland are being forced to discuss marijuana legalization. We've got new science on marijuana and schizophrenia, and regulation of medical marijuana in California suffered a blow today when Drug Policy Alliance has dropped its support for a recent bill. We'll get to that in the headline news. And then after the news, we're going to go behind the headlines where some new information just came out this month from the Financial Crime Enforcement Network that says anyone involved in the legal marijuana business, whether it's medical or recreational, cannot bet at a casino. We'll tell you why that is and what that actually means for you and me when we go behind the headlines after our news. And then at half past, we've got a great activist agenda for you. Two fantastic activists from the East Coast, Derek Rosenzweig and Chris Goldstein from Philly Normal, are going to be calling in. They're going to talk about how the top cop in Philadelphia is supposedly going to ignore the decriminalization that just passed with a veto-proof majority in the Philadelphia City Council. Also, we'll get an update from Chris on his federal probation that he's serving for smoking a joint at the Liberty Bell. And then at the end of the show, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to talk about framing the debate around stoned driving, what you need to stop saying if we have any hope of beating the breathalyzer. Then we'll take things into hour two. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls at 971-533-7111. Stick around. Priscilla's next with the news.
Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of The Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. 420radio.org is proud to replay Drug Policy Facts with Doug McVeigh from Portland, Oregon. Hosted by the editor of Drug War Facts, this show is a wealth of information for seekers of truth in the drug policy debates. Catch the replays Friday at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
I'm afraid Priscilla's got the giggles. Can you hear everything okay yet, Priscilla? Still no audio. All right, let me try and dial that back out to you real quick. Sometimes we have some difficulties on our Skype connection. We got to make sure that's working. Can you hear okay, Priscilla?
I can hear great now.
All right, go right ahead.
All right, so here's what the news. Washington State's first legal marijuana stores are open for business on Tuesday, July 8th. The Washington State Liquor Control Board is issuing about 20 of the state's 334 licenses on Monday, July 7th, and the licensees must spend that first 24 hours entering their inventory into the state tracking system. Michael Perkins, who expects to open his I-502 store on Seattle's 15th Avenue Northeast, expects prices to be, quote, $20 to $25 a gram until the producers reduce their prices. I expect to run out of product, end quote. One grower rejected the rumor that producers are charging $5,000 a pound to the new retailers, saying, quote, we are asking $2,800 per pound. And we are asking the retailers we work with to cap their price at $420 per ounce to consumers. One retailer explained the difficult market Washington will be for him, saying, quote, you have to compete against the medical and black market while offering super high prices and limited supply, end quote.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting rollout starting July 8th here in Washington State. And it's going to be different than what we had to go with under Colorado's law, because under Colorado law, they already had a fairly well-regulated medical marijuana system that was going on. And so the Colorado market doesn't exactly provide any guidance for what we're going to be doing in the Washington market. In the Washington market, we do still have the medical marijuana industry that is set up. The legislature tried to tear that down earlier, but had no success at that. But the reason they wanted to do so was for the fear that people that would be facing this I-502 market would find the prices too high and then try to cheat their way onto the medical marijuana program to get the lower prices at the medical dispensaries. And with the tax rate essentially ending up to be 25% times three plus sales tax, when you're talking about $20 to $25 per gram, nobody I know wants to pay those kind of taxes. Now, some of the people interviewed for the story kind of pointed at Colorado and said most of the people shopping at the recreational market are more of the tourist market, and they still have a medical market running alongside of that. But again, I think it's kind of an apples to oranges comparison when Colorado's is so well regulated. And the differences between medical and recreational aren't that great in Colorado. Medical, you can have six plants and 2 ounces. Recreational, you can have six plants and 1 ounce. And the tax rates, while they're high in Colorado, they're not exorbitantly high like they are in Washington State. And Washington State doesn't allow for home grow. So I predict that the revenues that are going to be found by Washington State will be far lower than what were found in Colorado, that the legislature is going to realize they made a mistake, that it's been overtaxed, that it's going to have to be adjusted, especially after Oregon passes legalization in November, where the tax rates will be capped at $1.25 per gram. You can bet that our opponents will say, see, marijuana legalization doesn't work, and they will, of course, ignore all of the extenuating circumstances that are making legalization not work in Washington State. But I think this will just be a temporary problem. It'll only last a couple of years. As more states legalize, as more business flows in the marijuana industry, Washington State will have to adjust those taxes, will have to adjust their recreational market, or they will just be left behind.
That a family on trial in Washington may not mention medical marijuana in court. Quote, in regard to the medical marijuana evidence, I'm still persuaded that it will confuse the jury. U.S. District Judge Fred Van Sickle of the Eastern District of Washington said during a pretrial hearing teleconference on Monday, quote, I don't think medical marijuana evidence is relevant, end quote. The family of five sought to present evidence that the marijuana they grew was in fact legal under state law, doctor recommended, and appropriate for each family member's condition. The federal government charged each defendant with six felonies, including manufacturing, possession, and distribution of marijuana, and possession of a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking. The trial is expected to begin at the end of July. The defendants face maximum penalties that range from 40 years to life in federal prison.
Yeah, big shame in this trial, and it's not any different from a lot of trials that have gone down where people involved with medical marijuana aren't allowed to bring that up in federal court. And it's very disturbing to me because I can understand saying the evidence is irrelevant, that the testimony might be irrelevant, that under federal law, marijuana is illegal. But I don't understand how preventing people from mentioning it does any service to the cause of justice. I think these defendants should be able to say, look, we were operating under state law. Look, we're medical marijuana patients. We registered. We jumped through the hoops. And then if the judge wants to instruct the jury that that evidence means nothing with respect to the federal charges, that's fine. But to not allow people to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, seems to me counter to our judicial experience here in America. These people should be allowed to tell the whole truth in their trial. And the other problem that we've got here, that I've got with this, is the additional charges of possession of a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking, which always makes it sound as if these guys have, you know, got loaded weapons and they're, you know, checking everybody at the door and that it's a big gun thing when it's not. These people live in rural Washington. They've got hunting weapons. They've got weapons of self-protection. They got stuff that is never used in any way with respect to their marijuana business, but the federal government finds it easy to add a couple of gun charges because that is the federal exception to the Second Amendment if you're a marijuana consumer.
Maryland delegate Heather is running for governor, and her outspoken support for legalization of marijuana has brought up the issue for all the candidates. When asked by WVAL-TV, her opinion of legalization, New Jersey said, quote, marijuana prohibition makes our communities less safe and wastes valuable law enforcement resources. Why should we treat something less toxic and addictive any different than alcohol or tobacco? End quote. Her Democratic competitors, Attorney General Doug Gansler and Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, support Maryland's recent decriminalization but oppose legalization. Brown wants to, quote, learn from Washington and Colorado's experience and assess whether additional changes to Maryland's law are warranted, end quote. Gansler wants to, quote, include Maryland's health professionals, law enforcement, and community organizations in a debate that should favor health and security, so not a rush to tax a new source of income to address budget pressures. Also, Republicans running for governor told WVAL-TV they oppose legalization,
one businessman, Larry Hogan, approached decriminalization saying, quote, I don't want to make it easier for people to use drugs. Locking up someone for a very small amount of marijuana seems unjust.
Yeah, it absolutely does seem unjust. And sorry about the connection difficulties we're having, folks. We're trying to make sure that this is as good a bandwidth as we can get here for Priscilla out there. But yeah, the story on Heather Mazur coming out as, you know, so pro-marijuana legalization as she's running for governor has forced the rest of these candidates to have to, you know, address the issue. And maybe they really don't want to. This is pretty typical where the Democrats are willing to get behind decrim. And even one Republican seems to be behind the decrim measure here. But nobody wants to make that step toward legalization. And we're going to hear a lot of this over the next few years of, well, it's too soon to tell yet. Let's wait and see what Colorado and Washington do. Let's wait and see what Colorado and Washington do, which is why I always thought it was so imperative that we moved forward with states in 2014. There was a lot of push from the national organizations to wait until 2016, maybe only go with Alaska in 2014, which I don't think would be enough of a state in the national conversation to make much difference. But adding Oregon to the list of states by 2014 and adding a bunch more states in 2016 will make it so that that little talking point of, well, let's wait and see what Colorado and Washington do, become a little less effective.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg? That's the kind of debate that has swirled around marijuana use in schizophrenia. Researchers have long known that cannabis use is greater among people with schizophrenia, and people who use cannabis are twice as likely to develop schizophrenia. However, the question was always whether cannabis leads to schizophrenia or does schizophrenia lead to cannabis. Now, researchers at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London have discovered that people with a genetic predisposition towards schizophrenia also share a predisposition towards cannabis use. Not only were folks with the genes for schizophrenia more likely to use cannabis, but are more likely to use more of it than folks without the genes.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. This is stuff that we've talked with Dr. Mitch Earlywine many times before, trying to tease out what is the relationship between schizophrenia and cannabis. Now, the other side, of course, wants to say, you smoke weed, you'll go schizo, which is not true. We found that there's a correlation, but not a causal relationship. It's not that you smoke marijuana and you become schizophrenic. It's that some people who are schizophrenic then turn to marijuana to help ease their symptoms. And now apparently we're finding that the same gene that leads someone toward schizophrenia also leads someone toward cannabis use and more of it. This seems to me to be more of a confirmation of the theory of self-medication than the confirmation of our opponent's theory that marijuana causes any sort of schizophrenia.
Drug Policy Alliance has dropped its support of California's SB 1262, a bill intended to finally establish statewide regulation of the medical marijuana industry. DPA singled out the fact that the bill leaves intact the patchwork of county and city regulations that mean severe restrictions, moratoriums, and outright bans on medical cannabis access. Quote, there is nothing in the bill clarifying which entities are responsible for enforcement or who will promulgate the rules and oversee the implementation of this program. Many localities have banned dispensaries, and very few have approached the idea of licensing cultivation because of lack of support at the state level. Finally, this bill leaves cultivators extremely vulnerable because few, if any, localities regulate cultivation. The bill is still supported by police chiefs and Americans for Safe Access.
Yeah, this is the problem that we've had with California since the beginning, is any sort of statewide regulation of the medical cannabis industry. And this just means the more conservative areas of the state. There's some 23 counties, I think, now that have banned medical marijuana businesses and a bunch of cities that have done so as well. So if you're going to have a Senate Bill 1262 that's supposed to regulate state medical marijuana, how do you do that and still let the localities come up with their bans and their moratoriums? If there's going to be a statewide regulation, it needs to ensure that all patients throughout the state, even if they live in a conservative county, even if they live somewhere east and rural, that they can still have access to the medical cannabis guaranteed to them under the Compassionate Use Act. Everything else seems to be giving up, if you ask me. That's all the time we got for the news. It's 4:20 in Denver, where we're going to send Priscilla in search of more bandwidth. It's okay. We're still working things out. It's all fine, girl. Take it easy. We're back with Behind the Headlines right after this.
Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where we're taking a look at the latest information from the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network that's telling us that if you bet on the legal marijuana industry, you can't bet in casinos. This was a convention they had this month in Las Vegas, where regulators from the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, announced that casinos, like banks, are subject to the same money laundering regulations that prevent doing business with the emerging legal marijuana industry. The federal government considers all casinos, from Las Vegas and Atlantic City's sprawling gambling meccas to small tribal and riverboat casinos that are in 41 states now. There's gambling in 41 states. I didn't know that. Considers all these casinos as financial institutions. Now, we've reported previously how firms involved in the legal medical marijuana or recreational marijuana business in their state have run afoul of these money laundering regulations when they try to access banking services such as checking and credit and loans. Well, these same laws apply to casinos, it seems, meaning that they must refuse bets from anyone associated with the marijuana industry, all the way from growers and processors to wholesalers and retailers. Even casinos where medical marijuana dispensaries are legal, like in Oregon and Nevada, or where recreational pot shops are legal in Washington and Colorado, must ban bettors from the legal marijuana industry. Now, if a casino does accept bets from people in the marijuana industry, it must file a suspicious activities report with FinCEN, just as banks must do when processing any profits from the marijuana industry. These revelations show how the federal government is only now beginning to realize all of the ways in which state legal marijuana conflicts with federal regulations. FinCEN has issued a 7-page memorandum of guidance to casinos to watch for certain red flags that may indicate the use of a casino for marijuana money laundering, which includes depositing cash that smells like marijuana. But with marijuana becoming more legal, more people are going to be carrying marijuana-scented cash. That doesn't necessarily mean they're in the marijuana business. And as one money laundering expert explained, keeping track of this is very labor intensive. FinCEN worries that casinos may become an alternative for marijuana businesses that cannot secure traditional banking services. One possibility they offered is that a marijuana business could buy casino chips with the day's cash, then pay its employees with the casino chips that the employees could then redeem for cash. And FinCEN already requires casinos to file a report if an individual buys or cashes at least $5,000 in chips in a single day. Now, I can't help but think that the solution to the problem of marijuana businesses laundering all their cash through casinos would be to allow marijuana businesses to have a legitimate account with a bank. Once again, the problem isn't that we've legalized marijuana, it's that we haven't legalized marijuana enough yet. That's the problem. And this idea that casinos are like banks, and that they're somehow going to be applying the same level of scrutiny to someone placing a bet at the blackjack table as a bank would place on someone who's opening a checking account just seems ludicrous to me. Some of these huge casinos have, you know, hundreds or thousands of people on the floor at any one time. How in the world are they supposed to know that the guy dropping, you know, say $1,000 on the blackjack table is in the marijuana business or not? Are we going to expect the blackjack dealers to start asking questions? You know, where'd you get this money? Before you bet, let me smell your cash. Smells like weed. Afraid we can't take this $1,000 bet from you. This is just ridiculous. And the pressure that the federal government's trying to put here on the casinos and on the banks is going to backfire. They think, my speculation is that they think they put this pressure on and it somehow slows us down or stops the momentum of legalization. All I see it doing is providing more incentive to legalization as these big money entities, both the businesses with the money and the casinos who want to take it, start to get a little upset that all that money is hidden from their possible profits. Same as the banks are going to be upset that all these businesses they could be making money off of, they're not allowed to do business with them. The power of those moneyed, lobbied interests between Wall Street banks and Las Vegas casinos pushing for a legality to marijuana money may do more for legalization than all the protest marches of the past 40 years combined. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have Derek Rosenzweig and Chris Goldstein on the line from Philadelphia Normal talking about the police commissioner's refusal to bend to the will of the people on decriminalization. Stick around. We'll be right back.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319.
Hello.
Hello.
I am John.
I'm Scott.
We're from a cannabis broadcast.
And you are listening to 420radio.org.
Cheers.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Oh, my apologies, folks. It's not the Drug War Data Mining segment today. We've got a special segment that is dedicated to our friends in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Derek Rosenzweig and Chris Goldstein, who are with Philly Normal and fighting against the top cop out there who has recently called for his forces to ignore decriminalization. The city council voted 13-3, and they only need 12 votes to override a veto. They voted 13-3 to pass a marijuana decriminalization that would subject possessors of less than an ounce of marijuana to a mere $25 fine. We're really looking forward to that, but we are still waiting for Chris and Derek to get on the line with us. So we're going to have to take a short break while we await their return. So while we do, we'll provide some bumpers here for you, and we'll be back just as soon as we get them on the line. Stay tuned.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 34 after the hour, and we go to our phone lines where I believe we've got Derek on the line. Is that you, Derek?
Yeah, that's me. Hello.
Oh, so glad to have you here. Derek Rosenzweig from Philly Normal. Are you still the co-chair of Philly Normal?
No, not this time. I haven't been on the board since the end of 2012, but I've been volunteering with the group since then.
Okay, fantastic. Still, though, you can tell us a lot about what's going on. I reported the story a while back, just a couple days ago, in fact, where your city council had finally voted 13-3 to pass decriminalization in the city, but your police chief is saying they're going to ignore it. What can you tell us about this situation?
Well, as you reported pretty accurately, the city council passed our bill almost unanimously, a veto-proof majority, which means the mayor has until September when they reconvene to either put a signature on the bill or let it pass into law without signing it. If he tries to veto it, since it's a veto-proof majority, I don't think he can actually do that. So it's going to happen. At some point, the mayor is going to have to tell the police chief, you're going to do this. Now, what's happening with Ramsey, from what I've heard, is pretty much what you've heard, that he's claiming that they're going to still enforce state law over this ordinance. I know Jim Kenney's office is trying to work with both the mayor's office and Chief Ramsey's office to get past that and train them to enforce the new ordinance. And the new ordinance is really good, actually.
Yeah, I'm loving this. It was an ounce of possession.
Instead of being arrested, you get a $25 maximum fine for possession of under an ounce of weed, of an ounce or under of cannabis. And, no mandatory rehab classes, none of that, and no custodial arrest. It's a really good decrim bill.
And they do confiscate the marijuana, though.
I would imagine so. Most of the time they do, yeah.
Still better
I wouldn't
than
imagine that they wouldn't, but maybe you'll be that lucky guy who doesn't get it taken from you.
Well, getting your weed taken away from you is a lot better than getting your freedom taken away from you, so that's a good thing. So this police chief, he seems to think that state law overrides the local municipal law, but from what I understand, Philadelphia is one of the only cities in Pennsylvania that still does a custodial arrest for marijuana. Is that not true?
That is correct. The reasoning for that is, based on what I've heard from the state courts, is that because of how small the individual precincts are and how close the cops are to their precinct offices at any given time, that there is no justification for giving a citation on the street, and that by state law they have to bring them into the custodial arrest, basically. Philadelphia is the only city that does that. Every other city can, they can issue citations for some of these offenses. But now this ordinance would give the city cops the ability to do it specifically for marijuana, for small amounts of marijuana.
So
get it out of the courts completely.
So Philly cops seem to want to keep arresting people for marijuana, whereas the cops in the rest of the state aren't so into it. And when we look at the stats, those arrests in Philadelphia are something like, 7 out of 8 African-Americans getting arrested under this?
It's about 82%, the 5-to-1 ratio, basically. Yeah, for every 5 African-Americans, you have one white person getting arrested.
Wow.
And the hearings had, both the hearings had people from both ethnic groups testifying in favor of the bill and, telling about their experiences actually, being arrested and losing their jobs and other opportunities, for marijuana possession, something that's ludicrous.
Yeah, and do you have any estimates on the cost this is to the city of Philadelphia for continuing to be the one cheese that stands alone, if you will, in Pennsylvania?
Jim Kenney's office has estimated that it would save the city about $4 million a year.
Wow, $4 million! How many Rocky statues could you get with $4 million a year?
That I have no answer to.
Well, this just, it seems like what we always hear from cops, and then the next level is when your state legalizes medical marijuana, they'll say, well, federal law says it's illegal, so they're always looking to some higher law that agrees with them rather than accepting the will of the people at the local level that tell them, hey, knock it off.
Yeah. Well, Pennsylvania is a commonwealth also. Other states can, and the way that the Constitution is meant to work is that the first step is your local community. Your local community makes the rules, and if not, then the state can make rules on it, and if not, then the federal government can make rules on it based on the Constitution. So Pennsylvania changing this up, their medical law, and you know, legalizing it for medical purposes, and the cities individually making their own decrim laws. I think it's a trend that'll just keep on building. You know, we have other cities in the state who are looking at this as well. They're still in the preliminary aspects of, you know, writing up legislation and, you know, researching the numbers and everything. But we do have activists in other part of the other parts of the state who are actively working for decriminalization, similar to what we have. Not because of the mandatory arrest, but because of the just the benefits of having it on the books, of giving the cops the option of giving a lighter penalty. You know, for adults who have like a dime, or, you know, a gram or two of weed on them, for up to an ounce in our case.
Right. Now, as far as moving forward at a statewide level, how do things look? I mean, I know that year after year, you guys try for a medical bill. Lately, there's been talk of CBD bills. How far is legalization on the horizon, and what's happening politically in Pennsylvania?
Well, on the legalization front, since that's the hot topic lately, I would say, in my opinion, we're probably not going to see legalization happen until about 2017. However, we are seeing some of our legislators get interested in it. There was recently a forum at the University of Pennsylvania, which I took part in along with some guys from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. The city councilman Jim Kenney took part in it. The assistant DA took part of it. Dr. Jehan Marcou from Americans for Safe Access took part. And we had some from MPP come up. And we had a really good discussion on you know, whether or not Pennsylvania should legalize cannabis and regulate it like alcohol, and how to do it. And you know, it's just the first step in that discussion. So, you know, from a monetary standpoint, you know, Pennsylvania needs the money. You know, we're under budget, and or I should say we're over budget, overextending ourselves, and you know, they're talking about raising taxes in some areas to meet the budget shortfall. So, you know, this is one area where that could seriously help them. You know, Jeffrey Miron in one of his reports said that Pennsylvania could raise up to $1.2 billion from the marijuana industry. And, you know, who knows? I mean, it's possible. We have a lot of potheads in the state. But on the medical front, we're looking to see that happen this month, actually. So while legalization for adults may be a little further away, medical marijuana is looking to happen this year. So from the last I heard, we have a vote scheduled in the Law and Justice Committee on the bill to boot it out of the committee, hopefully sometime this week, hopefully within the next couple of days, actually. The problem is the amendments to the bill, and these amendments are available on the Law and Senate Justice Committee's page. Our Senate Law and Justice Committee's page on the PA Senate GOP website. The amendments that are currently proposed would change our bill kind of significantly. It got rid of whole plant cannabis and home grow, among things. It raised the penalties in a number of areas for non-licensed use. Since the bill got it takes it out of our Schedule 1 system, we have a similar Controlled Substances Act in Pennsylvania to the one that the federal government has. So it's listed as Schedule 1 as the most dangerous drug, pretty much exactly the same as the federal. And this amendment, well, actually the bill in general from the beginning, removes it from Schedule 1. So this is their way of still keeping some penalties on it. Now, we've been promised from numerous senatorial offices that that was a mistake, getting it, like taking away whole plant cannabis. So hopefully some of these changes are going to be regressed. And I got to stress that these haven't been voted on yet. So currently the bill is the original bill, but we're expecting a vote on these amendments and after it's amended to move it out of committee, hopefully this week. And we'll possibly see a vote on it in the full Senate by the end of the month. So definitely stay tuned to phillynormal.org and, you know, check us out on Twitter and Facebook. We'll be posting updates as, you know, as we get them and as they're verified.
All right. So it doesn't appear that it's going to go CBD only. It looks, or it sounds like you're fighting to keep access to the whole plant. Are they still talking about it being no smoking, and is there any hope for home grow?
Well, it was never no smoking. The fact that they were trying to keep it, you know, not whole plant, meant that it would only be concentrates.
Gotcha.
So they did specify that concentrates would be allowed, not just oils, but, you know, hashish and everything as well. And vaporization would still be allowed. But obviously, yeah, if whole plant is brought back in, which is, I would say, 99% likely at this point. I haven't seen the updated language with my own eyes yet. I'm actually waiting for them to get back to me on that. I would say at this point it's pretty likely that that whole plant will be back in the bill. It was testified in favor heavily by numerous people. We even had Irvin Rosenfeld, one of the only federal patients left in the CIMD program, come up from Florida and talk about how he's, you know, gotten hundreds of thousands of joints and smoked them from the federal government. So we're pretty sure that's going back in. As for home grow, it's something we're pushing for. There are a lot of people in the Senate and House who, for some reason or another, don't think that people are capable of growing it themselves and not having it enter the black market, even though we haven't seen that happen for the most part in most city states. So we could do it right, I think, and allow home grow, and we're trying to keep that back in the bill. There's just too many reasons that you have to keep it in the bill. You have to. It keeps the prices low for patients who can't afford to get it from dispensaries. It allows co-ops to be brought together for patients who want to have, you know, their medicine grown by a single person and, you know, not have to deal with dispensaries in general. So we're pushing for, you know, for the biggest amount of options for the patients as possible.
Excellent. Well, Derek...
What was your other question?
Oh, I'd worried about whether there was a chance for any home grow, and I think you covered that.
No, is that okay?
Yeah, but Derek Rosenzweig from PhillyNormal.org. Check out PhillyNormal.org for more updates on what's happening with Pennsylvania in decrim legalization and medical marijuana. We wish you all the best of luck coming up in this these committee votes here. Maybe get some medical marijuana out of committee and onto the floor without making too many compromises to the bill. Thanks for joining us, Derek. We appreciate the updates.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to talk about winning the debates on the framing of the stoned driving issue. Stick around.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
McGruff here. I want you to learn a song that tells people to say no to drugs. Users are losers, and losers are users. So don't use drugs, don't use drugs. Winners don't use, and users don't win. So don't use drugs. If you know a user even part of the time, tell them to quit, take a bite out of crime. Users are losers, and losers are users. So don't use drugs, don't use drugs. Okay, everybody, if you know a user even part of the time, tell them to quit, take a bite out of crime. Users are losers, and losers are users. So don't use drugs, don't use drugs.
Nice going, now teach it to your mom and dad and brothers and sisters and friends to help take a bite out of crime.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Don't ask you a bunch of questions. They want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Well, folks, today I wanted to talk a little bit about the framing of the stoned driving debate. And before we get into it, let's just remind you about the concept of framing. Framing is this idea that the concepts that we talk about are bigger than just the concept itself, that all concepts are embedded within frames that help the listener determine how they feel about a particular issue. For example, if I say the word gun, well, gun is just a noun that describes a machine that fires projectiles at a rapid pace. That's all a gun is. It's a noun, right? But the framing of the word gun means a whole bunch of different things depending on who you are, what your experience is with guns, what you've seen with guns, and so forth. The framing of gun is very different to a retired Marine running a ranch in rural West Texas than it would be to a grieving mother in Newtown, Connecticut. It's a different issue, and framing makes all the difference in the world. And the other thing about framing is that framing does not necessarily adhere to fact, science, logic, and reason. These debates that we have, these debates over social issues, often boil down to the frames people put around them and how that makes them feel, how that affects their identity and what they feel our culture is. So that now we're moving from the, if we're going to legalize marijuana, into the how and when we're going to legalize marijuana phase, one obstacle that's still facing us is this debate over so-called stoned driving. Now, if we're going to win this debate, we'd better stop making the same framing mistakes that got us 5 nanogram THC limits in Washington and Colorado's legalization in the first place. Here are some of the common responses that I've heard and read from well-meaning marijuana activists on the stoned driving issue. I'll tell you what I've heard and read, and then I'll give you an idea of how it sounds to that huge majority of voters out there that don't smoke pot based on their existing negative frames of marijuana. For instance, when we say we should judge marijuana using drivers by their observed impairment, not some THC reading, all they can hear is, we should wait until a stoner gets behind the wheel and exhibits some impairment we can observe, like crossing the center line and having a head-on collision. When we say, it has always been illegal to drive under the influence of marijuana, we should continue our current procedures for handling driving under the influence of marijuana. Well, all they can hear is, we're going to change nothing about catching stone drivers, but we're going to make it much easier for drivers to get stoned. When we say, well, chronic marijuana users build up a tolerance and show no impairment even when above the suggested limits, all they can hear is, those of us who smoke the most pot have been driving high all along, and we think we're fine behind the wheel. When we say, different users can have markedly different tolerances to THC, all they can hear is, nobody can really tell how much marijuana makes you too stoned to drive, and now that we're legalizing, all those newbies who didn't toke when it was illegal will toke now that it's legal, and they don't have any tolerance at all. So, what then must we do to win the stone driving debate? The first step is that we have to align ourselves with the public as crusaders against impaired driving. We cannot be perceived as just shrugging our shoulders and dismissing any concerns about stoned people behind the wheel. My suggestion? Now that we're legalizing marijuana, we must ensure that responsible marijuana use means no smoking and driving. The second step, we must start dismantling this treat it like alcohol frame with some marijuana ain't alcohol frames. I'd suggest this. Marijuana is chemically different than alcohol, so the law enforcement tools we use to detect alcohol impairment won't work with marijuana impairment. Then the pivot. In the third step, we must complain that the proposed THC limits and breathalyzers won't fulfill our shared mission because they won't reliably detect impairment. We could say something like this. No matter where we set a stoned driving THC limit, many unimpaired drivers will be busted for no good reason, and some impaired drivers will get off for being under the limit. And finally, we must offer some alternatives, because it's not enough just to say, keep doing what we've been doing, when we are removing the prohibition that the public believes is a deterrent to stone driving. We could say this. Education of marijuana consumers, better training of police officers, and laws against used paraphernalia and accessible marijuana in the driver's compartment are more effective ways to reduce marijuana-impaired driving. Now, I hope these tips can help win the debate, but I'm afraid that we may already be too late. When it was urine tests that detect marijuana use within a week, or blood tests that detect marijuana use within a day, it was easier to set the frame that THC limits don't work because they're just be catching pot smokers, not those who were too stoned to drive. But with newer technologies like the breathalyzer that will detect use within a couple of hours, we risk appearing to defend people's right to toke up and then get right behind the wheel. This driving issue is one we may have to bend on, or else it might break us. I was around in the early 80s when Mothers Against Drunk Driving mobilized and turned a country that loves beer and states' rights into one that succumbed to federal extortion for a nationwide 21 drinking age. The power of a moral panic, properly focused, can overcome any social mores and even the lobbying might of the most powerful corporations. If the nationwide mood toward recreational substances and driving continues evolving into a question of responsibility, as in, did you get behind the wheel too soon, rather than a question of impairment, are you too messed up to drive? There may be no political escape from a nationwide per se THC limit. If that's the case, if a limit is inevitable, perhaps it would behoove us to fight for a higher limit rather than no limit at all. Now, don't get me wrong. I am well aware of the science on marijuana and impairment, and I think any THC limit is unscientific and unjust. However, politics is the art of the possible, and we may be approaching a point politically where opposing a roadside THC detection technology is fruitless. If the choice of political battles is fight all limits and end up with 5 nanograms or zero tolerance versus fight for a really high limit and end up negotiating to a medium-high limit, I think the latter would be preferable. Now, we may not be to that point yet. Maybe we still are at the point where we can convince the American public that, as one of our chatroom people said, smoking marijuana is more akin to tobacco than it is to drinking alcohol when it comes to driving impairment. I wouldn't bet on that. I know all of us know that we drive fine. I've seen it in the chat room. I've ridden with many of you. I know we all think we drive fine. And the science shows that most of us do indeed drive fine. But if you think you can win the stone driving debate by saying, hey, I've been driving stone for years. I'm fine. I'm a great driver. Then you don't know how moral panics work. And you don't know how the majority of people perceive those of us who use marijuana. Be careful, folks. We push this the wrong way, and we may be just signing our own zero tolerance death warrant. That's all the time we got for Hour 1, but we'll continue the discussion in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Call in at 971-533-7111.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
For Priscilla Seib and I'm Radical Russ, thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you manage, you grow it.